walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Janice Wolf, founder of the Rocky Ridge Refuge in Arkansas facility. It's generated attention online and elsewhere for its distinctive mix of animals, where dogs and cats mix with a capybara, a zebra, an African tortoise, a miniature horse, among others, some of whom are special needs animals, many of whom hang together in unlikely combinations. We'll learn about the Rocky Ridge Refuge came to be, how animals arrived there, and about how these cross-species friendships and more developed when we speak with Janice Wolf in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in today's show, we'll also have a brief conversation with Sherry Silk, Executive Director of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, about their event Bark in the Park, the 27th annual Bark in the Park, I might add, taking place this Saturday, March 29th at Okeechobee, Fort Brook Park. Right now, though, let's hear an animal song. This is Cliff Richard with the snake and the bookworm on Talking Animals.
Snake and follows every step she takes. He tracks her down on the way to school, and she thinks he's a sneaky fool. She's trying to get her homework done, and he wants to go and have some fun. The snake and the bookworm, the snake and the bookworm. She's trying to pass geography, and he's trying to kiss every girl he sees. Well, she got a test and she don't want to fail, and he's pulling on some ponytail. Well, she's thinking about her education, and he's thinking about his recreation. The snake and the bookworm, the snake and the bookworm. One fine day, and he wouldn't let her get away. Man, he kissed her just one time, and then something happened to his mind. Well, now he sings a different song. He's been studying all night long. The snake is a bookworm. The snake is a bookworm. The snake is a bookworm.
That was Cliff Richard with the snake and the bookworm, a peppy animal tune to get us started this morning. Let's move right into our chat with Janice, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. From the Rocky Ridge Refuge, let's welcome Janice Wolf to Talking Animals. Good morning, Janice.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Proud to be here.
Well, that's nice of you to say. So Rocky Ridge Refuge has really seemed, especially I guess in recent months, to capture the public's imagination, particularly online and Facebook and elsewhere, and I certainly count myself very much part of that phenomenon. At the same time, I know the place has been going strong for 20 years, so I have all kinds of questions, but I think it's sort of one of those instances where we really need to start at the beginning. So maybe you could tell me about the very beginning of Rocky Ridge Refuge.
Well, I think I was born to rescue animals. I remember my very first rescue. I wasn't even 3 years old yet, and I found an injured pelican on the beach in Key West where we were living at the time, and brought him home and did what I could for him. And from there, I was known as the kid that would take in little orphan baby birds and bunnies and things like that as I grew up. But real life gets in the way, and of course I had to do the whole education thing and a real job and for a long time. But I always, when I had the chance, I always did a little bit of rescue on the side. And finally, when I moved back to Arkansas about 20 years ago, I slowly began acquiring animals in need as I still had to work two or three jobs at a time to support it. And then it just evolved, and eventually, about 6 or 7 years ago, I was able to do this full time.
Let's back up to sort of before that happened. You said you were sort of acquiring animals. Was there a particular incident or situation that prompted this? I mean, it sounds like way back from, and most of us would be hard-pressed to remember what we were doing, much less rescuing pelicans at Key West, that's been a sort of a through line for you. But in your adult life, when you were in Arkansas, was there something in particular that sort of spurred you to start actually having them in your home or in some sort of rescue situation beyond just sort of tending to their needs situationally?
It was always a goal. I've lived in a lot of places. In fact, I grew up as a Navy brat, so moving, you know, it was always in my life. And then I was living in Hawaii, and I was working for a vet. I've gravitated towards animal jobs, you know, all along, and in fact, specialized in pet therapy in college. I was going towards that, using animals to help people, and done a lot of programs in that area. But working with people and working with animals, there's no comparison. Animals are easier.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So it was always a goal to get a place where I could have more animals and do more helping of the. So once I got to Arkansas, which meant I had a little more land and suitable place for animals, they just seemed to find me.
Well, so Janice, let me ask you this, because it sounds like the early years were, as you say, you were a Navy brat, so that sort of explained probably moving around as much as you did. But what actually drew you to Arkansas, which it sounds like obviously where you've settled?
Well, actually, my father was from Arkansas, and although I never had roots of my own and hadn't lived here, we had visited here a few times when I was a child, and of course, there's a lot more land and rural area and cheaper than a lot of places like Hawaii. And, you know, so I kind of had roots here by virtue of him, and it just made sense to come back here and where I had relatives I had never met and things like that, trying to make a home. And it's worked out. I don't want to go anywhere else right, you know, for now.
Right. Well, you'd have to pack up a lot of animals to do that if you were to think about moving. Yeah. So when you did settle in, is where you settled in then where I'm speaking to you now, or have you relocated one or more times to have the facility that you now have to accommodate all these nice animals?
Well, I actually moved about a year and a half ago, but before that, I was 20 years, just about 10 miles from here, in the place I thought I would settle. But the funny thing is, I ended up having an animal that became world famous, and that brought thousands and thousands and thousands of visitors to my door. And after he passed away, almost 4 years ago now, I still had visitors coming to my door daily, and I just couldn't get anything done. So eventually, I decided I needed to move and kind of hide.
So even though you're only a mile or so down the road, I guess that was sufficient, conspicuous enough to not be bothered by those visitors.
Yeah, I had a change of address, and it's kind of a top secret for most people. Just, I'm a one-person operation, so... For 7 or 8 years, I that's all I did was stop what I was doing when people found their way to my place to see this animal, because I knew it was something special, and he was a Guinness World Record, and so I spent my days showing people the animals and him especially, but it really cut down on how many I could rescue and work with.
Well, let's talk. I thought we'd get into this a bit later, but we're sort of into it now. So let's talk a little bit about Lurch, because really you can't probably tell the Rocky Ridge Refuge story without bringing in Lurch. He's kind of the main character in some ways, in addition to yourself. You guys are sort of the co-main characters, perhaps. So, yeah, maybe you could describe a little bit more about Lurch and how he first entered your life.
Okay, well, yeah, I give Lurch all the credit for really being able to do what I'm doing now because he brought attention. I just thought I'd be a person, you know, working and doing what I could. Always, you know, I never asked for money or any help from anybody. I just did it and you know, paid my way with my income. And Lurch came along as a little five-week-old baby calf. He was an African Watusi, and he just was something I had along with everything else here. But then as he grew, his horns kept growing and growing and growing. And it wasn't long before I knew that he wasn't normal in that sense. And his horns ended up massive. And finally, they grow most of their life. So I just watched this guy grow and grow, and people, you know, would get excited about it. But eventually, I went ahead and talked to Guinness, and he was certified in 2003 as the world's largest horn circumference on an animal ever recorded. And he even grew after we certified him for Guinness. But, you know, that brought attention to everything I was doing. And I thought, well, that's great because I can educate people and you know, use it to the benefit of all the animals. But that opened up, literally, people from around the world would just show up on my doorstep and to see him. And so that began the next, you know, 7 or 8 years of just people beating a path to me. And some days, especially holidays, I could have 50 carloads of people show up, you know, and I spend all day just showing them the animals and letting them take pictures with Lurch and whatnot. And that kind of became my full-time job then. You know, he was a special guy, very gentle, loved kids, and even broke to ride. You know, you could climb up on him. And so he was really a neat guy. And then I could kind of teach people about animal respect and kindness on the side, you know.
Well, so how did Lurch, he came there as a baby calf, you mentioned, but how was it that he came to you?
Well, a friend of mine has a large exotic ranch where she raised things to go to zoos and whatnot, and I had been up there because occasionally she'd have, you know, animals with issues or something that I might rescue, you know, bring to my place. And I saw this little calf, and something just told me I was supposed to have him. And she said no, that, you know, he didn't really, you know, need to get rid of him. But then it was winter time, and she got to thinking that, you know, he might not do well. And anyway, one thing led to another, and I brought him home. And it was definitely meant to be, because through him, I ended up with some neat experiences. Like I was on the Ellen DeGeneres show a couple times, and some other media. A lot of the Japanese just were crazy about him, and I must have had 7 different Japanese TV crews over the years come to film him all the way from Japan, and just things like that. Because he was so unique, of course, and one of a kind.
But besides those horns, which, you know, obviously were world record setting, what else made Lurch special? And what maybe related to that? What accounted for your obviously kind of special connection to Lurch?
Well, he was just a sweet, gentle boy. You know, my animals. They all seem to, even the exotics. I mean, they all just seem to be nice. Mm-hmm. And you know, they interacted with a lot of visitors, and I never had to worry about the animals. Now the people sometimes.
Yeah, that's a different story sometimes. Yeah.
But and Lurch, actually, one story, when he was just still a very young calf, actually, he actually saved my life. He prevented me from stepping on a copperhead snake that was in the path. I just had little flip flops on, and I was following. There was my llama Noogie was leading the way on this path, and then Lurch was behind Noogie, and we were all just headed to another field. And suddenly Lurch stopped and turned sideways and blocked my way because there was a lot of rocks on one side and a fence on the other side. So it was just a real narrow path, and I really didn't want to climb over the rocks in my flip flops. So you know, I was trying to push him out of the way so we could go on. And Noogie had taken off and run down the path, and that was the llama. And Lurch wouldn't budge. And I finally grabbed hold of his little horns at the time and tried to swing around them. And just as I put my foot down, there was the copperhead. And luckily I had enough leverage by still holding on to him that I could jerk backwards and not step on it. But it wouldn't have been pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously he was not only preventing that from happening, but determined to save you.
Seemed like it, and yeah. I give him credit for that. And just all along, just a real special guy. You know,
sure.
Took everything in stride, and took care of the other animals too. He was kind of they just all gravitated towards him, and he kind of led the pack of whatever I had here: antelope and miniature cows and sheep and. Chickens would roost on his horns, and cats would lay on his back, and so he was just a neat guy.
And he sounds like, by what you're saying, but just from what I've heard and read about him otherwise, just like a real gentle soul.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He, like I said, little children could you know, hang off his horns. I mean, he gave children rides and would just pose with them, so careful. He was real good with the other animals. I had a crippled horse he was best friends with that... He kind of assigned himself as a bodyguard to this crippled horse and made sure that the horse got to eat and was safe, because sometimes the other horses would kind of push it out of the way to eat. And now Lurch said, uh-uh. So he made sure this horse was well cared for, and they slept together and laid together. And Lurch was so careful with his horns that he wouldn't knock this horse accidentally.
Yeah.
And it was just really neat. He knew where those horns were, and even, I mean, they ended up being 8 feet tip to tip, and easily could have taken out a small village with the swing of the head. But he was very, very careful.
Yeah, and very protective, it sounds like, of you and this horse that you're describing. So
yes, it was really neat. He just did that all on his own, and he never shared his food with other horses, you know, so it was a very special thing. He knew this horse needed extra attention, and he did it.
We're going to get into that in a moment or two, because that seems to be a bit of a running theme of Rocky Ridge Refuge. But let me just quickly let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Janice Wolf, founder of Rocky Ridge Refuge, an Arkansas sanctuary housing an unlikely mix of domestic and exotic animals who happily live together. If you'd like to ask Janice a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Janice, let's back up. I'm trying to get my history and chronology squared away here. So how soon after you started Rocky Ridge, or at least started taking in animals more kind of officially, did exotic animals enter the picture?
Actually, right at the beginning, I guess. The one of the very first animals I took in was a llama, and that was Noogie. He just had one eye, and he was a baby at the time. And I just bottle fed him along with the in the house. I hung out with the dogs at the time, and he was housebroken and just kind of hung out and laid around and with them and played with them, and he was a neat character too. In fact, along with the pet therapy I'd mentioned before, I took him to nursing homes to visit with patients and whatnot. And the neat thing about using exotics for that is, a lot of the nursing home residents, some of them will like dogs and cats that people bring in, but some of them are in a lot worse shape as far as emotionally and mentally, and it takes a whole lot to kind of bring them out of their shell, and most of them can't resist a llama walking down the hallway or coming in and nuzzling them. And so I've had some really neat experiences with people that just haven't really shown any enthusiasm about anything before, but the llama was irresistible, and I've brought lambs and donkeys and things in, and the same thing, you know, it can really reach people who maybe, you know, a common animal like a dog or cat just won't do. So that's kind of why I like to use some exotics in that type of therapy. It just really kind of
burst through whatever kind of reserve or shell. Yeah. When Noogie came to you and then others subsequently, I mean, did you ever sort of grapple with the question of taking in an exotic in terms of your ability to care for that animal, or even on a more pragmatic issue? I don't know if there's any, where you are, if there's any sort of permitting, licensing, zoning issues about having an exotic animal. But was there any of that, or did you just sort of say, hey, they need a place to live, and I'm going to give them a place to live, and that's all there is to it?
Yeah, kind of both. I mean, the one thing about Arkansas is there's not a whole lot of rules. I mean, especially then, it is, unfortunately, actually, people can have lions and tigers and bears if they want to, and so there's not a lot of legislation or rules about anything, and it was never an issue at all.
And did you always feel confident that you could care for whatever exotic sort of was brought to you at Rocky Ridge?
Well, it's easy to learn. If people want to know, the information is out there about anything, especially nowadays. And I was a veterinary technician. I had always worked with animals. It's just always my life. So animals were something I studied and researched from when I was just a small child. And also studied a lot of alternative medicine and healing. So I would sometimes get animals referred from veterinarians that had given up with conventional medicine, and I would, do the holistic. But as far as the care, the information's out there. It's not hard to learn. A little bit of trial and error sometimes on things. But, if you want to learn something, it's there. It's just a matter of doing it.
Well, and as you say, you have a background in that, and you were helping animals since you were that three-year-old with the pelican in Key West. And obviously it also sounds like, not that you would say so yourself, but that you have a real gift for animals and sort of caring for them and healing them too. So I'm sure all those things kind of combine. On a related note, in terms of exotic, in some ways, one of the most striking resident there is your zebra, Barcode. How did he arrive there, and what's life like with a zebra?
Well, he's my second zebra.
Oh, okay.
I actually, 7-8 years ago, rescued a little baby zebra that had a seizure disorder the sellers, they were going to just get rid of it. They didn't. Unfortunately, just like dogs and cats that people breed for money, people are breeding exotics the same way. It's actually a huge business, and anything that's going to make money is out there being churned out, and same with the zebras and other things. So he was just one, of course, that wasn't going to be able to be marketable, and I went and got him and brought him home, and he's one I treated naturally and healed. His name was Z-Biscuit, and he was a neat guy and enjoyed visitors for many years. Unfortunately, when he was 5 years old, he colicked and impacted, and we couldn't save him.
Oh, shoot.
And that was really tough, because I'd had him since he was just a couple weeks old, I really missed it, but never figured I'd have another opportunity to rescue a zebra. And a few years ago, I learned of one that had been rescued from a petting zoo type situation, and was in bad shape. But a veterinarian had actually rescued him in another state and had gotten him healthy, but couldn't keep him. So I brought him here, He's here with the gang.
And so what is that like? Because, Janice, zebras, I think, tend to have a reputation for being kind of mean or nasty. At least that's what you often hear and read about them. Near as I can tell from photographs and otherwise, that's not the case with Barcode. But doesn't that tend to be their sort of disposition generally?
Well, yes and no. Zebras and other exotics and wild animals, I would never say they're mean or nasty. They are who they are, and it's not meanness or nastiness at all. It's just they weren't meant to be kept in captivity, and they're not horses, and they're not ponies, and people don't respect all the time that they're zebras, and
yeah.
They can be dangerous. Any animal can because it's acting out of its own instinct and nature. And will react, against treatment that's not correct or fair or nice. So you have to know what the animal is, and you have to know not to ask of it things that aren't right for it or proper. And you know, saying that, I mean, a cow can be dangerous. A bull, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Dogs can be dangerous. People are the most dangerous animals, but sure. You know, they have instincts and habits, and you know, just like a horse can kick, a zebra can kick, a bright. But no, you know, if you respect them as what they are, and you know, be smart about handling them. That, you know, that's what I say about everything, though. I mean,
well, right. Well, that brings me to something else that really seems like a through line of Rocky Ridge Refuge, which is that you've been really looking after obviously an array of animals for many, many years. But I think within that, there's certainly a large contingent of what we might call special needs animals. And so is it just now that you've been doing this long enough where people know, whether it's a domestic or an exotic, if an animal's in trouble, ill, injured, whatever, it's like, hey, let's call up Janice.
Yeah, that's been happening for quite a while, actually. And of course, being the only person here, and I'm, you know, I'm a small operation. I can only keep it to what I can manage, and so I can't take in a lot of what I'm asked to take in. But you know, I consider each case, what I can do for the animal. And if it's possible and able to get the animal here, then, you know, I'll certainly consider taking it in. I don't do carnivores, necessarily. I don't expect to, you know, to have tigers living with lambs for the most part. But, you know, the one rule we do have here is everybody needs to get along, because there's not a whole lot of space. And, you know, there's a few people that think, oh, well, you just put these animals together for neat photo opportunities. But no, actually, this is the way we live. We have a small house, and you know, we have to kind of all live in here, kind of close quarters sometimes. But we do have to mix species and whatnot to make it work, and it does work. But you know, I'm very cognizant all the time of who might not like this one, or you know, I don't force any animal to be with something that's going to scare him or whatnot. I mean, you know, it's just common sense, really.
Well, it does seem like it's in some ways sort of not that you've put these animals together to create a photo opportunity, but sort of the other way around, that these animals, through one means or another, have come to live with you. And then the other thing, I guess, I really wanted to sort of talk about too, you know, sort of in almost in conjunction with the special needs issue, is that what you've touched on, and so have I, which is that these animals live together and coexist not only peacefully, but it seems like happily, in often very unlikely combinations.
Yes. Last year, the capybara I have, Cheesecake, she's been here now for 3 years, and I last year I had a great call for taking in pregnant mama dogs or dogs with litters, and ended up with lots of puppies. And like I said, my house isn't really that big, so when the puppies were weaned from mom and needed to kind of move out of the house and get in an area away from their mamas, the logical choice for me was the large yard just right next to my main yard where Cheesecake lives. It was the safest fenced area for little puppies, and so I put them in there, and she just took right to them and became my appointed foster mom from then on. She just loved those little guys, and so she got each litter as they were weaned, and she ended up fostering 8 litters last summer.
Cheesecake did.
Cheesecake did.
Yeah.
It was very handy because, you know, they were still young pups, but they seemed to do very well with her and didn't even miss their mamas. She disciplined them, but she also cuddled with them, and, you know, just they all looked up to her, and she just became very handy for me because, you know, she did the job that I might have to do more if she wasn't there. She uh, she really became their foster mom. They all gravitated towards her, played with her, and they just, none of them ever seemed to really look back as far as, you know, missing mama and crying. They just took right to her.
Well, so Janice, for those listening who might not be steeped in the realm of large rodents, maybe you could tell us what a capybara is, and then maybe related to that, how Cheesecake, again, landed it at Rocky Ridge.
Cheesecake, capybaras are the world's largest rodent. Cheesecake is on the small side for the species, although she's still a good 55 pounds, but a lot of them are even double that size. And actually, Cheesecake was a little different than a lot of my rescues. Cheesecake was actually a gift. When Lurch died, some of my friends I had never actually met, some of my online friends, felt really bad and somehow decided I needed something to nurture and take my mind off of Lurch, losing Lurch. And,
mm-hmm.
Conspired to surprise me with this baby capybara.
Wow.
So she's a little different, but she's become kind of my associate here. And
sure.
She'll take in. She's actually helped with all kind of different animals, but she especially likes those puppies.
That's great. Well, that's the thing about the way that it seems like those animals, by chance or whatever, end up living together at your place, that you make the sort of discoveries that otherwise wouldn't be possible. For example, the Cheesecake is very good at looking after litters of puppies. Obviously, it's been a huge help in that way.
Yeah, it's been neat because the capybaras, they are social animals that live in large herds normally. And so, I always wanted her to have companions. She grew up in the house with the dogs anyway, and would play with the dogs in the house, and then she needed more area for the most part, so she's got a large yard, and she can come in still, but she enjoys her yard out there, and she's always got some puppies or some rabbits, or she's lived with geese, she's lived with pigs, she's lived with miniature horses, it's a nice area for certain animals that need kind of a halfway house before they go out to the bigger fields if they're injured or whatnot. Has actually been my little nurse for several animals that need that area, and so it works out because she takes it all in stride.
and one thing, as you're talking here, I keep meaning to ask you, what how much space are we talking about? What kind of land do you have there?
Well, both here and at my former place, I did have about 15 acres, but most of it's Arkansas, and it's mostly rocks and hills and forests. So most of it's not really usable for most of the animals. There's only a small area that's cleared and kind of flat that, you know, is suitable for a lot of them. So in the small house. So we definitely have to buddy up. And you know, I don't keep animals in cages. That's one thing I don't do. And I also, don't want to separate and just have animals, in kennels locked up. I want everybody to be able to enjoy a large area and friends. So, I mix and match as is suitable, but most of the dogs are right here, of course, with me in the house, and the other critters as it goes. I mean, I just had a crow in my bedroom for a while, and I've had other critters in there,
it sounds lively.
It works. I just have to find a nook and cranny sometimes when we're really overflowing with puppies and whatnot.
Well, let me. We got some phone callers. We got some emailers. Let me again let folks know first, though, that this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Janice Wolf of Rocky Ridge Refuge in Arkansas, where dogs an array of domestic and exotic animals all happily live together. So we invite you to join the conversation. We have just a few minutes left with Janice. You can call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Janice Wolf.
Bless your heart, Janice. Oh, God, love you. And I would just like to know, how can interested parties donate to your operation? Because you sound like you have got the thing going. That's wonderful.
Well, thank you. The funny thing is, I take donations now and actually rely on them. I never ask. I'm real bad about asking for help.
I do not have internet or a charge card. But is there How can we get around that problem? I just don't know. There's so
I have a P.O. box. The good old snail mail. That's P.O. box 105.
105.
Midway.
Midway.
Uh-huh. M-I-D-W-A-Y.
Yeah.
Midway. And that's Arkansas.
Arkansas.
72651. 72651.
72651.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds
Thank
great.
You.
Oh, I've had so many friends who raised animals just like you have, and bless your heart is all I have to say.
Well, I'm just doing what I feel like I'm supposed to be doing. And
That's God's way, I believe, nature's way. And,
thank you so much for your call. That's I'm sure a lot of people listening feel much the same way. Thank you very much. And again, we should make a point of mentioning that the website is rockyridgerefuge.com, and you can get more information about how you can donate. And they also have a great, very active Facebook page. Just search Rocky Ridge Refuge and lots of information and photos and stuff of many of the critters we've been discussing. So we're sort of in our last moment or two here, Janice, but I wanted to, there's a point I kind of wanted to explore with you. To what extent is your work at Rocky Ridge guided by religion or a sense of spirituality?
I'd say spirituality, but I've always tried to be in touch just what my purpose in life and fulfill that. I mean, I've obviously... over my life, I've made a few false starts, and I've done other things, but eventually it all comes together, and I can see where my path, although sometimes rocky, it all led here, and I just had to listen and trust that I could do this. I've always lived very simply, like I said, I never knew that somebody, people would help. And I try then to also help others. That's extra donations or anything I get like that. I also redonate and help other rescues, other shelters, other individuals in need for animals and other things, because I believe you have to share and spread it around. And my own needs are very few, and so I enjoy being able to use what I get any way I can, and to encourage others in the same way. Even though I have a lot of popularity and a lot of following, I'm just one little person, and there's a lot of other people out there that do just what I do and do a good job, but don't get the same publicity. So I like to encourage them, I like to help them, and I like people to know that there's a lot of people doing. I'm nothing special. I'm just trying to do what I can and learn every day and just make a little difference in my corner of the world. And everybody can do that.
Well, I don't know if everyone can to the extent you have. I have two quick things to say, and then I'm afraid we are out of our time. But one is the thing about sort of giving back and helping is that we haven't really touched on, and I don't know that until people really dive into the Rocky Ridge world. I mean, people are struck by the combination of animals, and there's a zebra, and there's a capybara and stuff, but also you're very active, if you go to the Facebook page, in trying to line up adoption opportunities for animals. Hey, these people need a ride to such and such, so these people can adopt this dog, and you're sort of networking in that way on top of looking after all these animals, I guess, again, single-handedly, Rocky Ridge. So that's one important thing to note in terms of what you just said. And the other thing, too, I just want to kind of leave it at this in a way, is that when I did a few posts on Facebook just in advance of today's show, of course, with some of the pictures of some of the animals we've discussed today and others, one of the comments I got, which I think is, again, I just think really important in terms of the combination of animals and just the philosophy that you've brought to this. The commenter said, "I love these photos. I can't help but think of people of different races, faiths, nationalities, genders, and sexualities coexisting so peacefully." So, it's on a whole nother level, it seems to, I think, really have struck a chord with people. So, just wonderful work that you're doing, Janice. And thanks for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals. I'm sure there's a lot of animals that are waiting for you to get off the phone so they can... thanks again for all your great work. Again, we've been speaking with Janice Wolf from Rocky Ridge Refuge. Again, the website is Rocky Ridge Refuge. RockyRidgeRefuge.com, or again, Facebook page, Rocky Ridge Refuge. It's very easy to search for, and again, a great, great page. So thanks again, Janice, for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Well, thank you.
All right, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, so I am Duncan Strauss. In a moment, we'll speak briefly with Sherry Silk of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about this Saturday's Bark in the Park. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Jeremy Hotz with a piece called Bronx Zoo on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
He's there in the winter, though. It gets cold. That's the thing about New York, am I right? Absolutely. Freezing. In February, I had tickets to the zoo. They were freezing like an asshole. I went, oh, look at that tiger. Look how realistic he looks. Just like in the wild, frozen to the fence like that. Horrible trip that was. The only guy there that day. I saw the elephant fart that day. That was the highlight of my trip to the zoo. Biggest ass in the world farting. You don't see that on the Discovery Channel. Doesn't even sound like one of our sounds like this. The other animals are running behind it to try and keep warm. The tiger was going, point your ass this way. I'm stuck to the fence. And just melt me off the fence with your huge hot ass. That's exactly what he said. I was there. I speak a little tiger. That's what he said. It was the funniest thing I ever saw. And then it hit me, and it wasn't funny at all. And there was an elephant fart right in my face. And I'm wearing the gas permeable lenses. So the image is burnt in my mind for all time.
All right, that was Jeremy Hotz with a piece called Bronx Zoo, taken from his album Lost Bird. Moving now to hear about this Saturday's Bark in the Park, let's welcome Executive Director of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. It's Sherry Silk joining us again on Talking Animals. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. Thanks for having us today.
Thanks for coming back. So let's dive right in. What is Bark in the Park, apart from, of course, the granddaddy of all animal events in Tampa Bay, but what specifically is it?
Well, it is it's a fundraiser for us. It's a walk for the animals, but to me, Duncan, it's more of a party because a lot of people come to visit the vendors and all the other activities, and they don't even do the walk. So it's kind of an optional walk if you'd like to. This year is the first time we've moved it to downtown Tampa, and it's right along the Riverwalk. So, you know, if you want to do the walk, it's a lovely area to walk your dog along that area. But if you don't feel like doing that, just come and visit the vendors, and we've got all kinds of entertainment and bands, and it's just going to be a very different feel to it this year. We've been doing it for over 20 years, and we wanted to shake it up a little bit, and it's going to be in the afternoon instead of the morning, so it's a great way to come party with your four-legged friends.
Well, that's okay, so I was going to ask you, like, what things are different this year, and you've already hit two of them. So different location and different time. We should hasten to point out that the location specifically is Cotonchobee Fort Brook Park, and that the hours this year, I believe, are 12 to 4. Right.
And I hate to say this, Duncan, and it's rain or shine, and I'm really worried about the forecast, because we do have a chance for showers, but we're going to still be there, and hopefully what I've been told by the weather people is that it's going to be intermittent rain, so I hope people will still come out and support us, even if it's a little drizzly that
day. Oh, yeah, come on. Animal people, we're steely. We don't let rain keep us away.
That's right. And you know what? The animals need the money, because the money that we raise for this helps offset the cost of taking care of 7,000 animals a year, so you know we need it whether it's raining or not, so we hope people will still come out. It's a really fun event. I personally like it because so many of our alumni, and you know, we do about 6,000 adoptions a year here at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, and so many of the people that join us are alumni. And it's just great to see these animals, these dogs that were once in a shelter and now have a wonderful life with their new families.
For sure. The other thing, too, as you kind of touched on, Sherry, is that walk or no walk, there's plenty of other action at any given bark in the park, and this year obviously is no exception. So I think those include vendors and people tabling, but I think there's a pet costume contest, as
well,
I recall.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit
okay.
about it. First of all, there's that activity where the dogs go through like an agility course and they kind of follow a lure. It is hilarious. The dogs are off leash and they run through tunnels and up over these little obstacles, and it's really a lot of fun. People line up to do that event. And you're right, we're having three different costume contests. One is the most talented dog, and that's very interesting because we have some very talented animals here in Tampa Bay. look-alike contest where the animal, you know, the owner gets dressed up like the dog or vice versa, and then the overall best costume. And people are so imaginative. It's quite entertaining to see that. Charlie Belcher is going to be our MC, and he does a great job with the contest.
And then, of course, there's also, as you said, alumni from people that you've connected,
yeah,
dogs and families, so there'll be people that have been adopted. But is there also not a chance to adopt if you come out that day and you say, hey, wow, that's a beauty. I gotta add that dog to my family.
Oh, Duncan, when do we ever do an event without having,
right,
adopted?
Right. It was sort of rhetorical, Sherry. I have to admit, yeah.
But you know what? There's rescue groups, too, that are going to be joining us, and they're going to be bringing out their breeds as well. So it's some of our animals, some of the rescue group animals. There'll be a nice variety. And, you know, one thing I didn't mention is beer. I mean, beer is really important to us animal people.
Yes.
There's going to be food trucks and beer trucks. It's the first time you can sip beer and listen to a band. Halcyon is going to be playing that day, so you can bring out your dog, have a beer, you know, look at all the great vendors we have, and really have yourself an enjoyable afternoon and support the great work that we do here.
And that's another reason that whatever the weather is, you still got to come out. There's animals and there's beer. What else do you need
animals
to know?
And beer,
come on.
Food too.
Yeah.
Come,
right.
Too,
that's
right?
True. And yeah, live music, a few other things too.
Absolutely.
So cool. So Sherry, we're probably just about done with our time, unfortunately, but let's give a website and or Facebook where people can find out more or sign up if it's not too late or whatever they want to do.
Well, it's humanesocietytampa.org. And if you're not doing the packs and all that, you can come in. There is a gate charge and you get a free t-shirt with that gate charge, and kids under 12 are free.
Okay. And also, I know the overall site, but isn't there also a dedicated site, barkintheparktampa.com,
for the event? You're
yeah.
absolutely right.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so there's a few different ways to go to find out more. So, well, great. Sounds like yet another great Bark in the Park on tap, but with a few little twists this year to keep it fresh and different and interesting. So we'll see everybody out there at Coat and Trilby Fort Brooke Park starting at noon.
Starting at noon. Sounds great. Thanks
all
so
right.
much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sherry. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune, and we'll receive a pair of tickets to the Bay Area Renaissance Fair happening for two more weekends through April 6th. At the Museum of Science and Industry. We'll get to that in a moment or two here on Talking Animals. Right now, though, let's hit a couple of animal news and announcement items, starting with that zoo in Copenhagen that shot the giraffe, sort of major international news for some time. Well, let's pick this up here from the thing I have in front of me. A Danish zoo that made international headlines last month when it killed a healthy giraffe is once again in the news after it killed four lions to make way for a new male. The lions were killed Monday, since Tobias Bro, a spokesperson for the Copenhagen Zoo. Two of those were young lions that were not old enough to survive by themselves and would have been killed by the new male lion if it had the chance, Bro told CNN. He said the zoo had tried to place them elsewhere, but unfortunately there wasn't any interest. Okay. Locally here, I want to be sure to mention this before we run out of time, that award-winning photographer Melissa McDaniel will be in Tampa this Sunday, March 30th, for pet photos to support local rescues, and she's been sort of traveling around for some years on producing photo book projects. The latest one of those is Puppy Mill Survivors. It's the fourth in her series, and it contains portraits and stories of over 30 former Puppy Mill breeder dogs. She'll be in Tampa for one day at Groovy Dogs and Cats on Tampa, 2305 West Linebound Avenue. You can follow in 813-265-1333, and you can get your picture, your animal photo, professionally taken, and the proceeds benefit several local rescue groups, including a Florida English Bulldog Rescue, Great Greyhound Rescue and Adoption of Tampa Bay, Lost Angels Animal Rescue, St. Francis Society Animal Rescue, and Second Chance Boxer Rescue. So you need to call and make an appointment, and when you do, you should indicate which rescue you want us to support with the fees from the thing. So it sounds cool all the way around. There's elephant stories, aren't going to get to probably today, but sort of one quick connection is that there was that huge rampage when elephants got away from the Amula Shrine Circus in Missouri. And the flip side of that is that the Shriners in Los Angeles have decided they are no longer going to have animals in their circus, which they've been doing annually at the Shrine Auditorium there, I think, since 1926. But this year, they're going to have amusement park rides, games, carnival treats, etc., in lieu of, in the past, having performing elephants, elephant rides, and tigers. So congrats to them. Kudos. So that's all we really have time for today of animal news announcements. We'll get into more next week, no doubt. It's time now to play Name That Animal Tune. You are listening to Talking Animals. And you do know the name of that tune is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member. There will be a prize again, a pair of tickets to the Renaissance Fair, happening two more weekends through April 6th at the Museum of Science and Industry. The first person that calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, it's named that animal tune on Talking Animals.
They took my Bruce Wayne shoes down to Oldsmobile. Got to rockin' with the rhythm, run 'em over the hill. Put your cat clothes on, 'cause tonight we're gonna really rock it right. Yeah, kitty, put your cat clothes on, 'cause tonight we're gonna bob on right. Well, I slick up myself till I look like a dilly. I run downtown and get my female.
All right, can you name an animal tune? Oh, it sounds like maybe somebody can. Let's see, let's see. I can name that animal tune.
I was thinking hound dog, but ain't that it.
Oh, all right. You sounded so confident till the very end there. That's not quite it, sir, but thank you for trying.
Thank you.
All right. All right. So, we'll, any others that come in, we'll take them off there because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, April 2nd, when my guest will be Lily Tomlin, who in addition to her slew of amazing accomplishments in TV, film, and on stage, has a similarly distinguished record in the realm of animal welfare. Plus, we'll be speaking with her live, so maybe you can speak with her too. That's happening next Wednesday on Talking Animals at 9 a.m. Please visit our website, talkinganimals.net, for links to Facebook and Twitter and more information where you can sign up for our newsletter and more. I'm Duncan Strauss. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Thanks.